lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for episode 194, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream, or just hit that big fat play button on the website.
It actually says play, doesn't it? It does.
Song Talk Radio is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters or established professionals, and on the show we share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become a little bit better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me tonight are the scholastic members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team.
Here we go.
We got Blackboard Bruce.
Reporting for duty, sir.
We got, this isn't the Army, it's school.
Oh. May I ask a question, sir?
Perhaps later.
Okay. Does spelling count?
Flashcard Phil.
Oh.
That's me.
And handling our social media tonight, Vocational Learning Vanessa.
Vocational Vanessa.
And thanks to Phil for doing double duty on the board tonight. It's more than just pushing buttons. And tonight is very special, too, because it's Vanessa's one-year anniversary.
Woo! Yay!
Song Talk Radio.
We love Vanessa.
Happy anniversary.
Vanessa works incredibly hard, too.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, she's the hardest working member of the Song Talk Radio
team. She does
her
social media. She also does her administrative stuff, booking guests and all that sort of jazz.
Yeah.
She's our producer.
She facilitates our weekly phone meetings.
Yes, she does. She does a bang-up job at that, too.
She facilitates our facilitations.
Yeah, that's right, as well.
Yeah, very complicated.
So during
she goes
the show,
out for beer with us after.
Yes. Yeah. During the show, join in the conversation. Send in your comments and questions at Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we'll share them in real time. Or you can email us at feedback@songtalk.ca. Please stop by the site of songtalk.ca. Find out how you can be a guest on our show. And speaking of guests, drum roll, please. Ed Roman.
Yay! Hello, folks!
Hello, who? Ed Roman. Folks. Ed Roman is an award-winning singer-songwriter, performer, and multi-instrumentalist from Shelburne, Ontario, Canada, just north of Toronto. Blurring the lines between pop, rock, folk, and country music, Ed's uniquely crafted songs have received regular rotation on more than 100 terrestrial radio stations across North America and more than 400 stations worldwide. Ed is a 2014 Artist Music Guild Award nominee, a 2014 International Music and Entertainment Association Award winner, a two-time 2015 IMEA Award nominee, 2015 and 2016 Josie Shows Awards winner. You said that's from Nashville?
Yeah.
Yeah, and an Academia Awards winner, and a two-time Indie Music Channel Award winner. He has a very crowded trophy shelf.
Wow.
Does he? Yes. Ed's last album, Letters from High Latitudes, was critically acclaimed for Ed's socio-political, earthly conscious, and globally aware messages. This earthy, funky, and magical mix of music earned Ed airplay, chart recognition, and won over legions of fans around the world known as Edheads. I like that.
I like that.
Now Ed has returned with a brand new album, Red Omen, produced with renowned producer Michael Jack. The album featuring the first single and video, I Am Love, was released June 7th, 2016. Welcome to Song Talk Radio, Ed.
Hey, pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks for having me. So awesome being here in Toronto. Yeah.
Now, check out the shoes.
The shoes are out on the Twitter feed.
Zoom in on shoes.
We got the mismatching
Non-matching shoes. You
know, and my mom, I'm looking for the matching red shoe for my mom because she's got the black pair. She said, I got to get a red pair. And she fell down a little while ago, six months ago now. So she's just starting to walk again. And we were out the other day walking around. She had her Blackwoods on. I took a picture of both of our feet.
That's the cutest thing. So I want to ask you something, Ed, because when I heard your stuff, and you actually mentioned this before the show, when I first heard your stuff the other day, I thought to myself, Canadiana.
Yeah.
Right? And I have an idea what I think that means, but I want to hear from you how you would define it. We don't necessarily talk about genre a lot, but considering we're a Canadian show.
No, that's a good point. And I always say when I'm doing an interview or talking to people or putting something out, I'm proud to say I'm Canadian. Mm-hmm. I love this country. I work a lot in the U.S. My management is out of the U.S.
Because you have to.
Because I have to. But at the same time, I learned so much in this country about being human. From the farming that I did here as a kid to the people that I met because of my dad's sort of political career, All of that, and not only that, growing up in the 1970s seemed to me that music was paramount in everybody's lives. It was like a challenge at the dinner table to see who remembered the lyrics from what song, or, you know, no, that's not the right, you know, the way that they unfold on the record, like, or fighting for record space.
Yeah.
I remember coming home in 81 and 80, and when Elvis Presley had died, Lennon was shot. Those were the times when I saw people crying in my kitchen and was like, there's got to be something more to this music thing than it just being like on the dance floor. And, you know, so I, as a dyslexic struggling with writing, reading, gravitated to music. My mom, God bless her, she was so good to me because she wouldn't let people put me on medication right away. She put a guitar in my hand and she encouraged the storytelling idea. So when people would come over to our house, we'd be sitting in the kitchen, I'd be singing into a broken lamp. Like it was a microphone on a little stool, singing John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, or, you know, something like that. And I saw that enthusiasm, and I went, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep doing this, whether it's a living or I teach it. Ed, but Canadiana, to me, is defined by my experiences as a Canadian. Music, Herbie Hancock once said, the definition of an artist is one who has the ability to fuse their life with the rhythm of the times. And for me, my rhythm exists in Canada. The people that I know, the family that I have. Like I said, so much that I've learned in my life has come from being in this country. So I'm proud to say it's Canadiana.
Yeah, and I'm curious about the connection between the language of music and dyslexia. So what is the theory based on that that it's therapeutic for a dyslexic to get into music? What is the connection there?
Wonderful question, because I think it's the reading literature you're trying to absorb in the moment for that reason. And you're struggling from the first time you start to read, the word, the pronunciation. So go back, read it again. Then it's absorption. Then third time reading through, it's utilizing, remembering. Dyslexia says, well, yeah, you can remember that little story, but let it go. Don't worry about the framework. Don't allow it to sort of sit, you know, because once you remember a song and a story behind the song, it's stuck in there. So it gave me that sense of... how might I say, my own independence away from that academic frustration that I had. Because I saw Playtoons for Kids or whatever growing up in the neighborhood, friends of mine, and they were like, hey, Ed, play another tune. But meanwhile, you're in school trying to read from, like, The Interdependence of Living Things and struggling over every word. It was a way for me to really break out. And it's funny because it's given me, it was the catalyst for my memory. That problem.
Well, that's
was
really
my help.
Interesting because the literature and my the anecdotal evidence that I've read, I don't know if it's scientific yet, when they work with seniors who have dementia or Alzheimer's, they'll remember nothing, but they'll remember nothing about their past lives except every word to a song they heard in 1912. Every song. Because I think it's the melding of the melody with the lyric that hits a different part of the brain.
It hits multiple parts of the brain.
Absolutely.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It sticks, right?
It sticks.
That's why I can't get those jingles, those TV jingles from the 60s out of my head. I wish I could.
They're all impregnated in our brains.
I mean,
we were doing it in the studio. Who remembers the thing from The Littlest Hobo? You know, it was sure. But that's the beauty, I think, of music.
But you're actually engaged in teaching now, too, right?
I have been. I've been. Last 4 years, I've been on hiatus because I've been working and writing so much.
Okay.
So, but the teaching for me was like some way of giving back in terms of what I know, skill, ability. I mean, I'm a bass player by trade, that's what I studied, but I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I play guitar, bass, keyboard, drums, I'm a vocalist.
What did you teach, Ed?
Mostly bass and guitar. I loved having that transitional point for students when I was mentoring them, getting ready for university and college, so they were striking for their exams to get into school or doing whatever. That was, seeing now my students out playing in the world post-secondary is amazing. It's just seeing, it's awesome.
When did you start writing songs?
When I was five.
Five?
You know, like,
when
we had a busy
guitar?
Household. I mean, it was...
You got the guitar at five?
My brother had a guitar from the world-famous Knapsack company that was missing three strings, and and three of the top strings, the first, second, and the third, were fish line that were put on there by an uncle or something. And that's actually why I started playing classical guitar, because of that nylon feel underneath my fingers, right? But it was picking... My brother, you know, sat in his room. Don't touch the guitar. Best thing you could say to a young young kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Go grab it. Mm. And with eight of us living in this tiny farmhouse, the cattle business, my dad's political career, it was like crazy. So I would like hide in the hall cupboard where all my dad's shoes were and like work on little tunes. And then somebody would come and go, come on out in the kitchen and play for so-and-so, right? So that's, for me, it was like, yeah, I had to do it. It was like a way to get away from everything.
Do you remember when you transitioned from playing, just fooling around to actually playing an actual song that you would remember? Were you like 8 years old or?
Well, that's the thing. I think, okay, like I went to church. So, I mean, church music, like I was singing stuff in choir.
Yeah.
And in grade school, I was actually doing plays in theater like Oklahoma, Peter Pan.
So you were singing and remembering.
And remembering all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's where teachers seem to let me, you know you're shining here, Ed. Mm. You're good at being, you know, theater.
Wonderful.
You're good at what you're doing. So yeah, I went, okay. Exactly. Mm. And then when I got to high school, and you got the option to have theater and music, I was like, I'm going to go talk to the
easy
music
choice,
guy.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when did you actually write a song that you would remember and perform or record? Like, did you start recording tunes or just to hang on to them? Or?
We had a group called the Water Lilies, local group of kids hanging out, no buses in our neighborhood, farm country, okay? We'd con somebody's parents into taking us to a music store, rent music gear over the course of Christmas break, March break, summer break, and lock ourselves in a basement room or something and wouldn't come out of there till we recorded 15 or 20 tunes.
Wow.
That was our summer. That was our
really?
Fun. So
wow.
We were... I mean, when I was 14, I was thinking
about
this today. Yeah, we played our first gig at Lee's Palace when I was 16.
Oh, wow.
I was like 1986.
You guys were doing cover songs? Or
all original.
All originals.
Yeah, all original stuff. But that's the thing, that competitiveness at that point in high school was like, there had to have been 50 bands that were between the high schools that we were talking about and other high schools that were in our area. So writing original music was big. If you could go to a recording studio when you were 17, and we actually sold a 45 to 1,500 people in high school at that time. It pre-sold the 45 to get the money to have it duplicated. And it went around afterwards with the little chits going, here's your chit and here's your 45, right?
So is there something that, from a songwriting perspective, you would tell yourself at 16 that you know now that you didn't know then?
Stop thinking so much.
Yeah?
I think what I learned in the last number of years is that when I'm sitting down and I'm sparked by an idea, if I try to force it, and I don't want to sound like, you know, it's the contrivity immediately follows.
Mm-hmm.
I find if I listen to what that immediate thing is, And instead of saying it should be this is what I want to say, I'm trying to listen to what it's telling me.
What does the song want?
And how is it going to pull me through that experience?
Right.
And I try not to say, well, I'm not going to write that kind of tune because it's country. I'm not going to write that kind of tune because it's funky sounding. I try to let that all go, and that's why people like will listen to one of my records and you hear a pop number, a funk number, a folk number, a country number, a spoken word piece, because I don't try to put any framework on it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it always keeps it fresh, that adventure.
There was one song on there that actually seemed like it was going like really hard rock, like
punk rock.
Like
it's punk been playing
metal,
a lot of
almost.
Metal stations.
Yeah.
It's called Clone the Sheep. It's
very different. Okay, so speaking of songs, how about we hear one?
Sure. Mm. This is a tune called I Told You So from my previous album called Letters from High Latitudes. And I think it speaks for itself, let's just say that. You ready to go, folks? We build the myths inside your shopping carts and all the hearts of everyone you see. Buy up the bygones and illuminate morons. Have you seen it on TV? Yeah. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Another hand inside the puppet of an ass falling down on the ground, and he's crying, he's your savior.
Mr. Savior. box crying babies who will slit you and guilt you. The neon enticer injecting the flavor. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hi. Lie with your pants on fire, with your pants on fire. Hi. Yesterday's messiahs, aisle two. Tomorrow's liars. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Drum fill. Gow, boo, doo. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Yes, we did. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Yes, we did. I'd hate to say it, but I told you so. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We build the myths inside your shopping carts and all the hearts of everyone you see.
Cool. I like the fact that you actually just said drum fill. Because, you know, that's a lot easier than putting up with a drummer. It really is, you know.
Oh, now, wait, Neil's a drummer. He represents that over there.
In the house.
You've got a drummer.
Yeah.
And a couple of bass players.
Yeah.
Very, very cool song. I was surprised by one thing. The break in the middle of the chorus. Mm-hmm. You stop to snap your fingers and you think the chorus is over, but it's not.
No, it's hanging there.
It's hanging there, and you just keep on chugging. So I don't know, was that something that just sort of felt right at the time?
Yeah, and I really like the tension of the C sharp minor 7 chord in there. It's really offering that space that lets you hang in that way. That
and gives that's on
that
the woe?
Mystic kind of, pardon me?
That's on the woe?
That's on the woe. On the
yeah, woe. Yeah, woe, woe, right? And I've always, you know, that. I love that tension, and you know, nobody's really using flat 5 chords that often in pop music anymore.
No.
And like when I heard Stevie Wonder use it in certain tunes, I was man, I really want to have it hang there.
Mm-hmm.
But it lent itself right away. I just was working inside of the progression, doing a chord alteration instead of having B minor coming up, changing it to a dominant 7th with a 9, mm-hmm. so it has that major sound, and then chromatically moving, which makes the listener grab it in their ear, going, that sits outside of the realm. Mm-hmm. Whoa, damn, I'm sorry, I told you so. Right? It gives that theatrical opinion to the chord. Right?
Yeah, absolutely, because if you're going to do it, then You better do it like that.
Yeah, why not, eh?
Well, I consider the alternative, like you're saying. Like, if you just left it as the regular major or minor choice there, it wouldn't have had that hanging feeling.
Well, and we have that feeling, even inside of progression, that it's going up that way, and we use that diatonically, but so often, pulling a sharp chord, moving that one semitone, really allows that, and then it allows you to actually come out of key, if you really wanted to, right?
It does.
So it's also a good catalyst for moving elsewhere.
And of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that in terms of the structure of the song, you have to hang on there.
You could
use that unusual chord as just a passing chord, go to it for a moment, and then keep on chugging
along.
Absolutely.
Even in the production of it, when I was working on it, we started to think, well, let's not do that at the end of the tune. Let's let it play, and actually, because it's going,
And it
doesn't stop here. It's still pushing it for the listener, right? But so having it in that point really accentuates it there, the chord progression, right?
For sure. Interesting choice.
Yeah, thanks, man.
I want to talk about the lyrics.
Please do.
I love it. I write, personally as a songwriter, I write lyrics that are clear and understandable and not very metaphorical, not very image oriented. And I always admire writers like you who can put shopping carts and hearts and bygones and morons and TV all together. And it's like, I get it. Like, I get where you're going, but it's not it's not a blind instrument. It's suggesting something, right? So you're suggesting this puppet, an ass falling down, crying. All these images are this modern world that's screwed up, obviously, and things are not going so well, and you're being manipulated. And I get all that. At least that's, I think, what you're saying. And I like the fact that I can get what I get, not what you're trying to get me to understand, if you know what I mean. So.
You're going
to
make me cry because that's ultimately what I'm, you know, literally, literalism, I should say, if that's even a word.
Yeah,
say
it is now.
For now. Yeah. It drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. I like that what you just said inside of lyric writing. It may say this at face value, because it did, and that may draw somebody in. Mm-hmm. But as you start thinking about it, it has other layers. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily have to be what I wanted it to be about.
Right, other layers for the listener.
But hopefully it's summating something in that bigger picture without directly saying
it. But that being said, when you started writing this lyric, or as you're writing this lyric, are you starting with a very specific notion or idea?
I was like, we build the myths inside your shopping carts. I was watching a whole bunch of documentative stuff, reading Noam Chomsky, thinking about things that my father said to me before he passed away after his political career. My sister, who worked in the commercial industry for years and years, all tied into one evening after watching How to Get Ahead in Advertising. Mm. You know, Richard E. Grant spew off the top about it. And we know what to sell her, don't we? You know, she just goes on. And
was the one with the two heads?
You got it. Yes. The pimple crows in the evil great. Head.
We got a tweet in from Sharon.
Sharon.
Theatrical is the word.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Sharon.
Awesome. Word.
I thought it was really interesting because... Very often, you had a jump from the verse to the chorus, a very nice, tasty jump. But then from the chorus to the next verse, there wasn't really a jump.
No.
Which is really interesting.
I wanted it just to sort of let it do it, just like happen on its own. And again, I guess, you know what it was? It was part of that searching thing that said, why not?
Right. So does, at the end of the verse, does it actually go down like a fifth or something, or...
No, what, the first verse? After the first verse?
Yeah.
No, it comes back up to where it started again off that D6-9 chord.
Right, then.
Another hand inside. And this is the other thing about the next lyric that comes about the puppet and the ass. It comes out of normal rhythm. I want, instead of trying to find the right rhythm for the language, I said, well, let the music follow the language because somehow that's what needs to be said. So why should I change it? Another hand inside the puppet of an ass falling down on the ground, like it's pushing it in this way, like you're almost tripping and falling. And I went,
so you're doing so you did the lyrics first?
It all came together as a one thing. Like I started playing the leader thing.
And you don't care what has to move, it just has to flow.
Right.
And so the final analysis, does it feel right? I think is what you're going for. Does it feel right?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I love it. And theatrical in the sense that I like the playfulness of your writing because there's so much music is like to a click track and it's like this dom, 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 and it's just there. So much of popular music is just so self-evident and flat. It just goes boom. You go, okay, I get it, right? Or it's overproduced. But the to me, the test of a really good song is: can you pick up a guitar, just
or
you
piano.
And your voice, or pick up a piano? Yeah. But that's heavier. Or you get a small piano.
That's true. Yeah.
You could just play your guitar and sing, and the song holds up.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I'm hearing here, that this song is...
Yeah, absolutely.
I can just imagine what the drum feels. It'd be more fun, I guess.
One thing I really liked also is you made really good use of dynamics.
Thank you.
Within the verse, which is really important, because I think if you do have just going to present a song with just a voice and a guitar, making use of dynamics adds a lot more interest. Whereas...
Listen up, kids at home. So that's
such a simple thing to do. And, you know, it's actually even in bands. I mean, it's the thing when I've worked with, when producers work with me, they always, you know, back in the day, they'd say, you know, you can actually play quieter. You don't always have to play at 10.
Right.
And once you realize that, you go, wow, you know, because when you play at 4 all the time, when you hit 8 or 9, it's huge. And then when you do hit 10, it's insane.
I know.
And when I work with, I do vocal coaching with singers, and Neil has been in class with me. And what I say at the start of the song is, you have to leave yourself somewhere to go. And you also have to tease the listener. And I say almost, pretend you can't sing very well at the top of the song. And then freak them out in around the middle and hold something back still. And when you go for the top of the song, that big note or whatever, that big expression emotionally, really freak them out.
Well, that's right? It. And then it's a slow development as opposed to like that kind of shock thing right all the time. Like even with the way things are recorded and that limitation factor and compression behind stuff.
Yeah.
My idea behind recording is just what you said. If it feels right and I can capture it on the bass with a voice, a drum kit and the voice, a guitar and the voice, a piano, I build around that. And allow it to develop that way.
I've got a question about this song, and you guys can feel free to answer this as well. Is this a protest song?
I don't know. This is a good question. You know what it was? It also was like, I was tired of going to the grocery store because I'm an agriculturist. I'm a farmer. I've been growing food all my life. I come from a very big agricultural family. And a very political family as well, too. My father was the first coalition candidate ever in the history of Canadian federal politics that was asked to run as an independent and won.
Wow.
And he went to Ottawa. He did this while he had multiple sclerosis and a brain tumor that he eventually succumbed to.
Oh,
he was also Mayor Markham for 30 years, police commissioner for 14, and chairman of York Region for 6.
Right.
Wow.
That being at my dinner table in my home, it was always talking about what is happening behind the scenes. Not what's happening on television.
Right.
And he said to me before he died, he said, boy, there's going to be so many things that you're going to have to face, especially fighting war over food and water. And the right to know how it's grown, where it came from, how to protect your water. All these things that years ago as a kid growing up on a farm I took for granted.
Yes.
But for me, when I go to a grocery store and go, hey, rosemary, which I grow now, why is it coming from Israel? I love Israel. It's great, but we should be growing this food in our own country. If I buy Alan's apple juice, I don't want to know that the apples are coming from the United States.
Or Peru.
Or New Zealand. Or Chile. Our culture used to eat based on what was available and ready and fresh.
That also means that in the middle of winter, you're just going to be eating root vegetables.
Well, so. and this is what I've trained myself almost to do with our apple stalks, potato stalks, carrot stalks, garlic stalks. I practically buy none of that until May. And I haven't bought a potato in 10 years because I keep replanting from the stuff that I see.
I'm going to take that as a yes.
So, yes, it is a protest because I'm trying to say, basically, I told you, think about where this is coming from.
I think it's a
protest. I'm long-winded. What do you want me to say, bro?
I mean, I wouldn't have asked the question.
Yeah, but anyway.
Well, for those of you just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio here. We're having fun. It's Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. We're streaming on songtalk.ca live. Tonight, our guest is Ed Roman. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts and your ideas to Song Talk Radio or send us an email, please. And that means you, Peter, or Anthony. Yeah. Feedback. They're my friends who said they would send an email tonight, so I'm just prompting them.
Yes.
Feedback at songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find the links to all our products, our books, web services that we talk about on the show, resources page at our website. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have on October 31st, you ready? A very special
Halloween
show. Prepare to be scared. Next Tuesday, October 31st, November 6th, it's, are you ready for a drum roll? Song Talk Radio's 4th anniversary special.
Four years.
It's been 4 years in this studio. I feel like I've lived here for 4 years.
Congratulations. Well, you can smell it.
And if, thanks. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on Sunday, November 26th from 1 to 4 at the Transac Club. It's free to join on meetup.com. Free to attend, always the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca. You can find the link to meetup.com. Come on out. It's fun. It's just like this show, only there's 30 people in the room.
When was the last meetup? Was it last weekend?
Wednesday.
Or was it before? Oh, Wednesday. How was it?
It was great. It was great. Great spirit in the room. We got a lot of great reviews. We had first timers, and they all wrote in reviews on the site after, on the meetup site, saying, what a great thing to have in Toronto, and I'll be back. And it's all just to encourage songwriting. song. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. It's man, it's I wish it existed when I started, because man, I think my life would have been different.
Really?
That's what I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we got some email, and we love to get email.
Yes, we do.
From our friend C. Stewart Cook. And he says, I'm still in love with the Command Sisters, but I think Michel Thibodeau might well have displaced them. Yeah. So much talent in what came over as a beautiful, rounded, and grounded character. Yeah, and that's...
That was a few weeks ago.
It was a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Michel Thibodeau.
Yeah, yeah,
she's amazing. She's amazing.
Nice. Incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Still enjoying every minute of every episode.
Oh, great.
Thanks, Stuart. Thank you, Stuart. Thanks so much. And please don't forget to send us your thoughts at feedback@songtalk.ca, because we love getting emails, and we do read each and every one of them.
Well, and I paid those two guys, so I hope it happens.
That's always that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Was
and
just
speaking of emails, Phil.
We have a special CD giveaway.
Oh.
Woo!
So we're going to be giving up Ed's new CD, right?
Yes.
And it's called Red Omen.
Red Omen. Which is sort of your name backwards and twisted.
It's an anagram. Yes.
Yeah, it's an anagram-ish.
Dyslexic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Sure. It's very clever.
So it's, we'll be giving it away. So the first person who sends in an email from now on the live stream, and the first person who sends in on the podcast stream on Sunday evening, you will win a copy of Ed Roman's new CD.
Red Omen.
And,
say that fast three times.
Mm-hmm. And this won some awards, right?
Yeah, it was three pre-Grammy nominations, Josie Show Award this past year for Best Contemporary Artist of the Year, and a bunch of nominations through the IMGA.
And what does that mean?
IMEA, International Music and Entertainment Association.
Oh. Ooh. Okay. All right. So just send in your emails to feedback@songtalk.ca. That is feedback.
Tell us you want
songtalk.ca.
And the first one.
The first one
wins.
Now. We'll get it.
Yeah.
And then the first one on Sunday. We have to do two because we have people live on the listen to the live show, but we have a lot of people listening to the podcast stream. So,
of course. Yeah.
You know, and you can be anywhere around the world. And that means even you, Stuart, if you want to write in.
Yes. Good old Stuart.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got another song from Ed tonight. This is called The Way She Goes. Do you want to talk a little bit about where this song came from?
We have a winner.
Okay, we have a winner.
We have a winner.
Oh, we got a winner. All right.
Amazing. Is it Mike?
It is Mike McInnes.
Oh, Mike. God bless you, Mike.
Congratulations, Mike.
Because Mike actually missed the boat last time when Blair was giving away his CD. He was late, like 5 minutes too late. So
right
on the ball this time.
No,
there you go, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
He's a great supporter of the show. And Mike ended up to being my assistant on Wednesday night at the Songwriters Meetup.
Yeah, yeah.
He brings cookies.
Yes.
He helped with the tech.
Homemade cookies.
And he loaned his guitar out to a couple different singers there.
Michael is a great supporter. What kind of cookies were they?
They were sugar cookies. They were just sugar and dough. Oh, they're so good.
That's the way to go.
Sugar and dough. Can't go wrong with sugar and dough.
But I digress. Let's have a song.
All sure. Right. Yeah. Did you want a preemptive?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's nice so our listeners can know what to listen
absolutely,
for.
Absolutely. You know? The Way She Goes. My grandfather, you know, because I said we lived with three generations in one house, was always this kind of like, would say something in a parable. But it would send you thinking for like days, weeks, months, years. I'm still thinking about some of the things he said to me as a kid. And one of the things he would say to me was, dirty hands make clean money. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean people that get their hands dirty in the dirty business world. He came from a country and an old world mentality about stuff.
A strong work ethic.
Yeah. Was in the military in the Austro-Hungarian War many, many years ago. Learned to speak a new language, brought his kids here, developed a scrap iron business. Mm-hmm. That's where he made sort of his living to do what he did. And, you know, that phrase kept rolling around in my head. I have I'm going to call it a mystic bathtub in my house. Mm-hmm. When I fill it with water, it becomes this conduit for just relaxing, of course, but just ether of information and language that keeps coming to me. And that kept rolling around in my head for months, and I couldn't figure out what it was that it was, I was trying to say, or what it was trying to say to me. I'm standing in my garden. I grow a lot of tobacco. And the tobacco rose that grows like this is standing in front of me. And you have to prune your roses on your tobacco plant so it actually produces more leaves. You're looking at me like tobacco.
Sure.
When you do that, before I did that, I could see it, and it was swaying. Hmm. And I felt like I was dancing with it, trying to cut it. And this thing came up in my head that said, I could dance a lifetime with my sweet tobacco rose.
Oh, lovely. Mm.
And that, yeah. With that other statement, you could build your nation with dirty hands in denim clothes, came from part of what my grandfather said, but a subtle twist at the very end.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything started to kind of fall into place.
So was this, was this started off with the lyrics then?
Yeah, and the guitar part. It's like I literally went to the axe, picked it up. I was like fiddling around a G and like A major and D and typical like songwriting kind of chords. But I could dance a, and if it was like, I like A. A feels right for this in my voice, and it lets me push my voice a little when I need to and lay right. back when I don't.
Because it's important to actually figure out where your voice sits naturally.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But
and, you have to, experiment with that.
Right, and I think what I like about some singers is, like you said, the imperfection is what turns me on.
Yes,
Mingus
definitely.
Would say he would purposely write pieces that would make it incredibly hard for your average excellent musician to play. And why? Because he wanted to hear them struggling in the music.
Yeah.
It actually added that sense of excitement behind
it. Who was that?
It.
Which writer?
Charles Mingus.
Charles Mingus.
And if you listen to like Branford Marcellus or Winton, will actually talk about this. He says, you see this? This stuff you would see in an etude book under really hard, and it's hard to play this kind of stuff. But he would say, Mingus did this on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I like doing, too, is finding those keys that push me out of my normal comfort zone.
Oh, okay, cool. Let's hear it. The Way She Goes from the album Red Omen by Ed Roman.
I could dance a lifetime with my sweet tobacco rose. You could build your nations with dirty hands in denim clothes. And even in our twilight, I think that everybody knows. Your open mind and subtle heart are the only way she goes, and that's the way she goes. Just like an open door or window, that's the way she goes. Just like the bathwater with the baby, that's the way she goes. Too many people acting crazy, that's the way she goes. If you've been singing this song lately, the whistle on your kettle's been chirping, and beat red is the song. Your mortal shackles been winning battles, I think you've known this all along. The squeaky wheel's been seasoned, 'cause the grease price is too high. Just change another channel, it never ever changes, and wave it all goodbye. But that's the way she goes. Just like an open door or window, that's the way she goes. Just like the bathwater with the baby, that's the way she goes. Too many people acting crazy, that's the way she goes. If you've been singing this song lately, sha-la-la-la-la-la-la. It's wrong, but we say it's right. We sing sha la 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 la. We know it's black, but we say it's white. Sha la 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 la. You gotta put up a hell of a fight. We're somewhere in the middle of the ending, so summarize your fears and woes. It's like a fragrant golden season. It purifies you and your soul. I tip my hat to rebels when the newsman calls him foe.
And if you check inside your pockets, you'll find it's all just one big show. But that's the way she goes. Just like an open door or window, that's the way she goes. Just like the bathwater with the baby, that's the way she goes. Too many people acting crazy, that's the way she goes. If you've been singing this song lately, that's the way she goes. If you've been singing, if you've been singing this song, that's the way she goes. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la. That's the way she goes.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Wow.
I can hear a fiddle in that.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
What a fun tune. Definitely.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's nice to have a song about something that also swings.
Well, yeah. It's got that feeling. Yeah, it's got that vibe in the background. It's got a Canadiana, too. Like, I mean, I grew up on a farm and in the country.
Right.
You can't help but not pick up an acoustic by a campfire at some point in your life and have that feeling behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but they do that in Tennessee, too.
Of course.
But this is a Canadian
This is
song.
A Canadian
It's not
thing.
A Tennessee song, you
no,
know what I mean?
No.
It's something about, I think it's the sense of whimsy and the sense of a little more fun.
Funny you should mention, but my applications when I do them, and I do put Canadiana in the genre, which is never usually in the genre unless you're applying for something in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I think that little chuckle that the person might get on the other end has gotten me in the door.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
In a weird way, by saying it is Canadiana. Because people would expect me, even my management in the United States, to say, it's Americana. I mean, we're Americans. Yeah. We live in North America. We are Canada.
Right.
But I want to call it Canadiana.
No, and I think rightly so. It is Canadiana more than it is American.
Yeah, it feels
Americana.
That way, right?
Yeah, no, it's
there are no borders when it comes to music, really.
Well,
no.
True, but there are tendencies.
Right.
And there,
when you start talking about lived experience, I mean, one of the things that I think is one of the things that keeps people separate in the world is thinking how different we are, when in fact we're all very much the same. And probably somebody's picking up a guitar on a farm right now in Russia,
yes.
And playing a tune with that swing.
Well, and of course,
and talking about their life.
Yeah, right? And of course, it's not to say that everyone adheres to. If you grew up on a farm in Canada, you're going to write this kind of music. I mean, no. You know what I mean.
No.
Like, of course,
no.
There's overlaps and exceptions all over the place.
And I guess that's folk music.
Yeah, and I thought it was one thing I wanted to thought. You know, we talk about. Cliches. And I thought the cliches worked well, like just like the bathwater and the baby. Mm. And don't forget, you can get the lyrics for the songs at songtalk.ca on the front page or on the show notes.
Now?
Right now?
Right on the
now.
Web?
Be
yes.
There now and forever.
Right now. Oh. Right now and forever.
You can study along with us.
Which I thought was, I really like that.
I love the squeaky wheel has been seasoned because the grease price is too high. That's that's a cliche turned on its head.
Well, that's what I was trying to do, is to flip even that bathwater with the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
So, you know, flip it around, right?
But you know what I wanted to hear at the very end, when you have, if you've been singing this song lately, because that's a great line, is I wanted to hear you vamp on that. If you've been singing this song lately, if you've been feeling more than crazy, if you've been doing this, you know, it's
oh, and build it on top. No, that's a nice idea.
It's
man.
It's a little traditional because, right. You know, that's the old, you know, songsters.
It's very showbiz.
Feel. If you're feeling such a lady, if you can't find a lady.
And the recorded track has that, and it extends actually for another minute with a sha-la-la-la chorus thing that happens in the background that I grabbed. From the sha-la-la-la-la right over the F sharp. So.
Yeah, it's like then the sha-la-la-la is nice. It's because that was part of your bridge.
Yeah, and you know, the sha-la-la, la-la-la, hey-hey-hey factor in songs all over the place, I don't just seem to work.
Yeah, no, I think it can agree.
Like, it calls people in without having to worry about a word at that
we
point.
Actually, we actually did a theme show a while back on the, we called it nonverbal hooks.
And then show.
And then one of the discussion points that came up is it dumbing it down? Is it like, you know, I think we came to the conclusion that no.
She loves you, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they can do it, then hey.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it also allows, you know, it's something that people can easily sing along with, although with this, it's only done on the bridge.
Right.
So you can like,
and at the outro, if you heard the recorded track, it goes right. In the outro.
Well, on that tech, we had our conference call. We have a pre radio show conference call every Monday afternoon.
We have a whole thing.
Yeah, we have a thing. So anyway, I came on the call and they said, "It's driving me crazy. What song is this? Do, 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 do.
Romantic Traffic, The Spoon."
Yeah, exactly. Good, you win. But the thing is, that's doo-doo.
Of course.
All it is doo-doo. But I only heard that when it was a hit, which was
in the 80s. And I knew that. You did that too.
Da-da-da.
It's all I want to say to you.
Yep. Anyways, I want to take credit for the fact that I knew that. You didn't know what it was, and I heard the first three notes, and I knew it was Romantic Traffic.
We'll get you a free Ed Roman CD.
I want to talk about the same thing I talked about the first song you did, Interruption versus Expectation.
Okay.
Right, because you did it again. Right? Because, again, at the end of the course, you've been singing this song lately.
Right.
It's like, it's got to resolve. Nope, I'm not resolving it. Not until the very, very last chorus.
Very last bit. But I
On the one hand, when you hear it the first time, it's like, this is kind of frustrating. I want this to resolve. But then, you know, the second time you hear it, it's like, okay, I get it.
It's building
kind of,
tension.
It's cool. Right. It's tension.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's really great.
And, you know, you find that more so leaving that extension or letting it hang on a chord that you don't, like in more like jazz music or things like that. But I think it works in pop music, too. Sometimes, letting it sit there and then the viewer going, what just happened? Or the listener like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're expecting the ending. Ka-da!
Yeah, yeah. Right? You got to do the jazz hands at the end, right?
We've talked a lot on the show about giving the listener what they want and not giving them what they want and interrupting the expectation and then fulfilling the expectation and a balance between the two. Because if you totally frustrate a listener for an entire song, they may never listen again.
Of course.
Well, yeah,
if you do it and then pay it off.
Well, unless you annoy them the right way.
Well, that's what if you do it.
Nine Inch Nails?
If you do it too much and too often, then they're just going to come, then it becomes the expectation.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Then they're going to expect the surprises.
Right.
But if you do it subtly and in unexpected places and not too much, then...
I think, you know, with any of this kind of stuff, it's you have to be careful that it doesn't become a gimmick.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, the part about artistry is knowing how to do stuff that doesn't become gimmicky.
Yeah, keep it tasteful.
And, you know, sometimes in the 80s, towards the end, the early 80s were really exciting. There's a lot of interesting stuff from Europe coming on the main hit parade.
Yeah.
But then it kind of got into itself and it became kind of gimmicky. And some of the stuff in the late 80s doesn't age terribly well because it didn't have the ability to pull back from that extremeness.
Right.
You know, and it's easy when you find something that works that you use it everywhere, but if you use it too much, it becomes a gimmick. And
talking about gated reverb,
bingo.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Although it's coming back. So
I like the flanging that John Lennon talked about. Everyone who was recorded his voice hated his voice, right?
Yeah,
so he said to the producer, "Give me more flange."
More flange,
which was just the echo.
Right.
So what's your songwriting process like? Are you writing every day or are you...
I'm writing every day, but like, I've probably written 300, 400 songs, some of which have never even seen the light of day. Five records that I've put out in the last 15 years, one of which is a double album.
Mm.
But like the writing process... those songs somehow start to fit together because your mood, where you're at in your life, and you go, this works with this because of what I'm saying here, and then, okay, I got the cash, let's record a record, let's put it out and make it happen. So I'm always writing in that sense, but I'm never with my instrument. Sometimes I'm not with my instrument when I'm writing. I might be on a tractor.
So what are you doing to keep track of your ideas?
I have books.
Books?
And with the photographic memory factor, I kind of work on that idea, stick that verse or chorus or whatever that I feel is in there, immediately get to a Kleenex box or whatever I can, hunk of old mail, and start scribbling.
Are you still thinking in terms of albums? I always think in terms of albums.
You think in terms of singles? I'm a conceptual person on that. It's a single market. We've kind of gone back to that idea, and it's a lot of money to put out a whole record of time and energy, recording, everything. But I like the whole idea about the bigger picture.
Yeah, yeah.
There's all those little drawers, but somehow it fits in that cabinet.
Yeah.
And I like that about when I fell in love with artists that did that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there are still a few artists that are still doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Becoming quite rare.
But I have to keep writing every day. Like, other than trying to make it an occupation, licensing my music, distribution, that kind of a thing, I do it because I have to. I've always been reactionary to so many different things. It's an emotional checkpoint for me. I'm sure it is for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. When I'm in an aggressive mood, I write an aggressive tune. Yeah. When I'm in a happy mood, I write a happy tune.
Right.
Yeah. When I'm in a happy mood, I might write an aggressive tune.
Now, you also mentioned that you have management in the States. How did you get develop the relationship with the manager in the States?
Well, a girl I knew here, Amy Rose, another country singer, she had another mutual friend who was in the military, who was bedridden. And I would go see this guy, hang out with him. And he just said, hey, you know, there's this guy in the U.S. that could help you. Get you publicity, which is what you need. You need exposure. You write good songs. You have great live shows. But you don't have that backing and somebody that believes in what you're doing. And I started to call all the people he was working with to try to find out if he was legit or not.
Yeah, because there's lots of...
Yeah, I've been taken, man, for a lot of money in my life.
We all have.
And we all have. Yeah. So regardless, when he said to me, take your time, think about what you want. If I can help you, I will. If I can, I won't. And I sent him a bunch of music, and he said, I really like this stuff. It's really different, and it sits outside of the normal realm of, like, framework writing.
Right.
And he said, let's try it. We did a year. I started working a lot, and before I knew it, I was working all the time.
So you're working actually in the States, you were saying?
A lot in the States, yeah.
Is it hard to get over the border?
It is, and I do it a lot on my own by myself. I'm on a holiday. Without a band, yeah. Yeah. It's our anniversary. We're going to New York, right? Yeah. Every night I'm playing, though. You don't know that.
Yeah.
But
well, they do now.
They do now. Right? But since the Department of Homeland Security stuff through the union and everything like that and doing Austin South by Southwest, that was like... crazy amount of work, time, and energy getting down there to play, do it all. So I try to do it as often as I can by myself in small houses where I can still have a captivative audience, sing to them, play to them, sell some CDs, and walk out and know I got a gig the next time I come back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the old school way of doing it.
How do you handle the travel?
It's hard.
My
car, yeah, and I try to go I'll do it go New York and do 5-6 nights in New York City. Then I'll come home. Then I'll go down to New Jersey and play a bunch of nights down in Jersey. Then come home again. Mm-hmm. Then I'll wait a couple of months so I don't raise any things at the border. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go down to Pennsylvania and play a whole bunch of get dates in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Then my manager will say, hey, you want to do South by Southwest for Red Gorilla and their tent? Let's set that up for the end of the... So we're always trying to find those little holes and bigger spots to kind of jump into. Mm-hmm. When I can. But now I'm focused on writing. I'm in the middle of a grant proposal with Factor. Trying to get the adjudicated grant, which hopefully can get me to the graduated A&R development, get some money, go on the road, be able to pay the band, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And sort of taking a step back, because for me, I own my own recording studio and have been recording a lot of music for a number of years. But after talking to people through the grant system, they're like, no, baby step your way through it. Try to get it and develop that rapport with the system. So you're not just coming out of the woodwork, Joe Schmo, I want $25,000. It's not going to happen.
Oh, I see. So they want you to go for smaller grants.
So $10,000 for recording, maybe $25,000 for A&R after that. But if you do the recorder, then you get the adjudicated. It'll be that much easier for you to get the other A&R one to go out and do that.
All right. And is that factor.ca?
Factor.ca, yes,
that's
sir.
Because right. And they're still doing that. I thought I heard they were cutting that back or something.
No, they're doing it full tilt.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you start off with the smaller grants, and then you'll sort of go through
Bingo.
The little grants.
Bingo.
That's really cool.
So with respect to this point in your life, getting more serious in terms of your career, have you had to cut back on your farming work? Like, what's your balance between your work on the farm and all this music business?
It becomes guerrilla at different times of the year. Spring, get everything, my manure in, rototill, plant all my stuff.
Yeah.
And then if I'm gone for 5 or 6 days, my wife's at home. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of looking after the garden. Or if we're gone for a long period of time, we have friends that will come down and look after the garden, make sure everything's okay.
In the winter,
it's half an acre. So it's
in the winter, the farm is...
completely dormant.
Completely dormant.
Well, what about cattle, though?
I haven't yet graduated to that.
That would keep me,
yeah. And I'm thinking that's more of a retirement thing at 65, or the head out on the tractor with his cows, right? that seems to work for me.
So you're a seasonal farm, then?
Yeah, and I'm proud to say that we grow enough food that, pretty much until, April, May, we're growing or eating our own legume, garlic, onions, carrots, potatoes, like I said. We're just buying coffee, maybe some meats,
yeah.
things. buying juices at the grocery store. Right. I like that. I've did it all my life. My family was that way.
Well, I hear the band playing.
Yeah, the band playing.
Better wrap up now.
Yes, that is about all the time.
It's a lot of fun. I hope
it
you'll come back.
Let's go buy cashews.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks
Thank
for having
you,
me, guys.
Where can our listeners check out more of your music?
Please go to edroman.net. They're all my social networking buttons are there. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. My YouTube channel is there. Check out the latest record. It's available on iTunes, Amazon. You can get it from CD Baby. You can get an actual physical copy.
Absolutely. Woo. Yeah, and that's always good advice for music fans out there. If you can buy the CD from the artist or that benefits the artist.
EdRoman.net.
Yes, and you can get the CDs, all my CDs there. Yeah,
and we'll certainly link to that from our website
as well.
Thank you. And please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. Congratulations to Mike McInnes for winning the Goma. Awesome album.
Thanks for listening.
And perhaps you will be on the podcast feed. You'll win too.
Yes. Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Also, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at our website. You can also find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on the show at our resources page on songtalk.ca. If you're in the Toronto area, please join us for our next Songwriters Meetup. It's Sunday, November the 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. That's at the Transat Club in the Annex area of Toronto. It's free to join and free to attend the meetup. Stop by the website for the link. We'd like to thank CJRU, 1280 AM in Toronto, for putting up with all our shenanigans, especially the station's technical officer, Michael Newton, and our program director, Alyssa Matthews. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Phil at
The Phil Emery.
Follow Bruce.
Bruce Harrett, two R's and two T's.
Follow Vanessa at
Sunny_Vanessa.
Follow Ed.
EdRoman.net.
And you can follow myself, Neil, at NeilMody_.com. Please stop by the website, songtalk.ca. Browse the past shows. We've got 190 some of them.
That's true.
And find out how you can be a guest on the show. That's all, folks.
However, we want to hear what you think of is a great Halloween song, because that's what we're doing next week.
That's what we're doing next week. So tell us your favorite Halloween songs.
Yes. So let us know. Send us an email, feedback at songtalk.ca. What kind of Halloween songs you think are really cool.
All right. Keep on writing, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Love you.